Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon and happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank. Did you realize that we're both wearing the same color today?
And it is not a manly color.
Well, that could be, you know, argued both ways, but suffice it to say we're both in hot pink today.
Yes. And I'm okay with it.
I you wear it well, my friend. You wear it well. And I am feeling the vibrant pink today because I've been feeling a little bit of this mix of blue, but happy, sad, but hopeful. I'm kind of in the throes of a confluence, a lot of different emotions. I generally don't start the show teary. I usually cry halfway through the show, depending on what we're talking about. But I'm just feeling a little bit emotional today in really great ways and in some kind of challenging ways. So hopefully my confluence of emotions, my mixed emotions, will fit in well with what our conversation is today, because it has been a time of adjustments. And I've told you before that I love the fall so much. I love the weather of the fall. I love being able to wear sweaters again after we get over our Indian summer. I love the do-over feel of the fall every year. You know, for some people, it's spring is maybe their do-over time, or January 1st is their do-over time, or their birthday, or they have some time that we all kind of think about the course of our lives, or maybe not all of us. But for me, it's the fall when we get back to school. And it's nice being a teacher because I get to live in that on that school system. The interesting thing about being, you know, working in a university is that my back to school starts about a month after most people's back to school. But I love the fall because I love the sense of kind of resetting my clock and thinking about what I hope for the year ahead. And this time of transitions also is a reminder that things change constantly in our lives, and that just when we think we have everything organized, and that we know where we're going, life throws, you know, us a curve, or something different comes up, or we have to, you know, be ready to cope with or change with the times or our life situation, whatever that is. And I think about my daughter, Kirsten, who's my granddaughter. Georgia will be turning 11 months in a couple days, and how, you know, I've forgotten how it is for new moms that every few weeks your child changes so much that just when you think you have their routine down, something else happens. We cut a tooth, or, you know, we have a growth spurt, or whatever those things are that kind of throw your mom mojo out of whack, because it's hard to ever really feel settled. And it goes at rapid pace when your children are little. And then you kind of settle into this routine. And not that it's, you know, day to day, same, same all the way through childhood. But, you know, you do get to kind of this routine with your children, especially when it comes through the elementary school years. That's a really nice stable time for most families, because the kids can get dressed on their own. You know, they can communicate with you. They're kind of settled into understanding how elementary school works. And so you kind of fall into this nice pattern. And then things kind of can go awry through junior high, and for some people, not so much. And then the high school years tend to start speeding the childhood process up, because so much happens in those high school years, especially if you're on a track towards college. You know, you're out of the gate freshman year trying to get those classes together. And then you zoom all the way through those high school years, and you hit graduation from high school. And then whatever that next step is, whether it's dropping your child off at a university or helping them get set up in an apartment with their first job, or seeing them take off on a gap year of travel or doing a service year of some kind. But whatever that is, that launching time post high school graduation, when our children are ready to leave home in a profound way for the first time, all of a sudden you take your first deep breath since the day you brought them home from the hospital. And it can have a different effect on different people. For me, launching my last child, my youngest daughter, off to college, had a huge impact on my life. And I've talked about that before, that it was an incredibly difficult and painful and grief-stricken experience for quite a long time, even though I knew it was coming. And I'm a therapist. I do this for a living. The transition for myself, personally, emotionally, was really challenging. For some parents, when the youngest child leaves home, they feel this sense of elation and just ready to move forward and ready to go on. And they feel like, you know, job well done, let's move on. And so we can have a lot of mixed emotions around our child leaving home. So where I am today is in that mixed space. I took Kelly up to the airport on Saturday and dropped her off to fly out for her third year of college in Chicago. And it was much different than it was 3 years ago the first time, right? Because the first time we flew out with her, got her set up in her dorm, cried, felt heartbroken flying home. And this time she was ready to go. She knew her routine. She has kind of her life as she knows it back in Evanston. And I think she was really getting antsy and excited to get back there. And so I felt, you know, I was ready to send her off. I felt like she was settled. I, you know, spent the last couple of years kind of getting used to the hellos and goodbyes of having a child that's going to school out of state. And so I dropped her off and I was looking forward to what the rest of the weekend had in store for me. So I started to head out of the airport. And just when I got to the entrance to the highway, to the freeways, where it pointed north or south or, you know, go somewhere, you have to keep moving, I lost it. I had to pull over on the shoulder and just start. I just had to cry, had to have my moment right there of just, wow, it's always moving forward and it's always changing and it's always a series of hellos and goodbyes. And although it's a joyous thing to see your children thrive and to do well, you also know that in the midst of thriving and doing well, they're struggling in a lot of ways. You know, they're trying to figure out how to best navigate their social circles at the university or how to best deal with finances and lack of money or, you know, lack of time and how to manage their physical life, learning how to get enough sleep or to choose the right foods and then building those relationships, finding friendships, realizing that not all friendships are the same. And we find that out more and more as we get older, right? That we have friends that we can tell everything to that we might not spend a lot of time with, but they're our confidants. And then we have friends that we just laugh with and we would never tell them a secret. And those are painful learning experiences when we're young. And then also that period of time from 16 to 28. And again, this is a general time period, but this is our mate selection time. Even though in our culture, our cultural norm now is to not get married until 27 to 30, kind of our cultural norm, biologically, that hasn't shifted. Biologically, we're looking around for our mate starting at 16, right around puberty and up until, you know, we finally find our mate. So think about all the things our children are navigating, whether they're at college or junior college or trade school or traveling, their developmental stage is the same. The things that are kind of being figured out. And so although I know my child is capable, the part of me is that knows what she has to experience to grow into the young adult that she's on the way to becoming, wants to protect her from that. And then the other part of me says, but you can't. This is her journey. This is her time. This is what you have helped her to grow resilience to be able to do. So I had my cry and I headed off south on 101 and on to my next event of the weekend, which was to go to Beaverstock. Which is, if you don't know what it is, it's a music festival in Paso Robles that I wasn't really familiar with, but ended up through, you know, twists of fate, being able to work there for the weekend to volunteer. My husband was working. And it was interesting because it dawned on me in the middle of the weekend, the music was fun, the setup is wonderful, it's an interesting mix of people my husband's my age, who have launched our children, and then their children who are in their early 30s, late 20s, all the way up to their 40s. It was kind of this interesting mix of generations of my midlife and older era, and then our children, and kind of this coming together of these two generations. And it occurred to me partway through it, one, how great it is to see our young 30-somethings They might be a little older, a little younger, starting businesses here, you know, developing their own niche, starting their families. I'm really enjoying this perspective of being able to sit back and take it in from, you know, an older place in my life, I guess from my grandmother perch. It's fun to see them. But it also occurred to me how different things are for me 3 years out of having a child at home, that I'm actually selecting who I want to spend time with more than kind of hanging out with the people who are part of my child's activities. And that's kind of a freeing thing. So I enjoyed the weekend. It was really nice. Kelly's back at school doing well. And then I moved into my next event of the week, which is start thinking about life at Cal Poly. Got to start getting my syllabi together for my classes, and went up to campus on Monday and was reminded how many young people are dropped off every year to start this process of, you know, they're moving in little groups together during their orientation week and, you know, following their leaders everywhere. And I just started thinking, oh man, I hope they're ready for this. I wonder how their parents are doing. I wonder what kind of words of wisdom their parents passed on to them before they dropped them off this weekend, or if they'd done all of their preparation over the last 16 years and they feel their children are ready. And I started thinking about, what is it I need to share with my students to help them develop into the young adults that they're here to become? Because as you know, I see the college experience as being more than just career preparation. I really think that this is a unique opportunity. These 4 years in college are a unique opportunity to develop socially and emotionally, as well as preparing for our financial future. But I don't see my students coming in with a lot of foundation socially and emotionally, that a lot of them really are struggling with those pieces of their development. So I was thinking about the developmental life stages that I'll be teaching in my classes and talking about, you know, what are the tasks and challenges we face in each of our life stages, whether it's launching from home or finding a mate and becoming a couple or becoming parents and then moving through the raising of children and then on to launching children into midlife. I teach all those stages. And so I thought, you know, today let's talk about those transitions. Let's talk about those tasks of launching. Because what I find really interesting is that when we launch our children into their young adult life, whether it's through college, whatever path that is, there are things we need them to know to be prepared. But at the same time, we ourselves are launching into midlife, into this new phase. Maybe it's an empty nest or a change of life circumstances. But the launch of our children coincides with the launch of ourselves into this new period of time. And there's preparation we need to be doing to be ready to face the tasks and challenges of midlife and beyond. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And I really look forward to hearing your perspective on this as well. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to be part of the conversation. You can also find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or through our Instagram at The Reluctant Therapist. You can always send me an email also to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Happy to hear from you. And if you have a question or concern or comment and you're a little nervous about going on the air, Bree's always happy to field your questions for you and let me know what they are, because I know it can be daunting to come on the air. But I do like to hear from you and what's going on. So here's the question I pose. What are some of the things that you wanted your children to know before they launched from your home? What were some of the skills that you felt were really important for them to learn? What were some of the experiences you wanted them to have? What were some of the life lessons? Do you feel like you did enough to prepare your children for their first foray off into adulthood? And at the same time, what about your own transition into midlife? How's that going for you? Whether you parented or not, we all are aging and we all move into midlife, whether that starts at 38 or 48 or 58. We have a very wide spectrum of ideas about what midlife is or where it starts or where it ends. But how are you doing with that? How are you doing with your midlife transition? Sometimes it's called a midlife crisis, which is interesting because the word crisis is derived from the Greek word Crone, I think that's what it is, that means a time of decision. And so whether it's a midlife crisis or a midlife transition, it's a time of deciding what our next phase or life experience would be. The Greek word it derives for is krino, not chrome, krino, and it means to decide. So I'm curious to know how that midlife experience is going for you. 805-781-3875. So from a therapeutic perspective, there are four stages or four tasks and challenges that our children need to go through in order to be prepared for adult life. So that transition from adolescent to adulthood requires four tasks and challenges be met so they're ready to take on the next phase. And they are the emotional growth, social growth, physical growth, and financial growth. And so as parents, part of our job is to help our children develop emotionally, socially, physically, and financially. And there are really specific things that our kids need to learn. And it's interesting because that adolescent period of time starts at puberty around, you know, between 12 and 15 and goes all the way until adulthood, which we now define actual adulthood as the age of 25 when our brain is fully developed and capable of making long-term adult decisions. So there are certain things, steps that we need to go through to help our children to develop emotionally, socially, physically, and financially. But first, let's hear from Bob. Bob, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Elizabeth.
Hi.
Hi. So I called to give you an appreciation.
Okay.
I'm 69 years old. Among other things, I've been a leadership consultant for over 20 years. So I get, with my clients, I get into every area of their lives, not just the professional, but their family issues, their relational issues, et cetera. And the appreciation I want to give you is you're sharing this story of dropping Kelly off at the airport and how when you got to this decision to go north or south, you lost it, to use your term.
Yes.
And that you pulled over and you allowed yourself to experience those feelings.
Yes.
And I think this is a really important and wonderful thing that you've done because you're showing us how a grown-up person can integrate the grieving process, the tears, into their daily life. And, you know, it's usually, let's say, socially more acceptable for women to do that, but I'm here to tell you, as a guy who's been on the planet for seven decades, that it's just as important for men. So that's it. I'm going to get off. I just wanted to give you an appreciation for that.
Well, Bob, thank you very much, and you give me the courage to keep going forward with the story then as well.
Okay, then you do that.
Thank you. Have a great day. And it's great that Bob brings that up because part of the interesting transition into midlife, and I'm going to draw from Jung's work a little bit, is that Jung, from a male perspective, went into his midlife crisis. He called it his creative illness period, where he kind of bordered between almost insanity for a period of time. And fortunately, his wife kind of held it together for him, kept him fed, kept him safe as he went through this really dark time of his soul, kind of moving from one life that he understood as a man building his career and his family and his life through kind of this passage into midlife and coming out the other side where he discovered or he found his profound work about individuation. And what's interesting is from Jung's perspective that for men, this period of time was about coming into contact with the feminine, with their feminine side, where, you know, men really spend the majority of their youth developing their masculine skills. And because it's called for in our culture and it's expected of men at that time, you know, to develop a career and an avocation and to take a spouse and to raise the family and that, you know, finally, at midlife, for men is the awakening of that feminine, kind of this calling to them where they get to start to really experience their psyche, their soul, their individuation. And for a lot of men, there's kind of this drive towards wanting to be expressive, to feel feelings, to develop a greater intimacy with others in their lives, to work on relationships. And so I find it interesting because in our culture today, you know, women also hit that midlife transition. And for a lot of women who were the emotional support of families, you know, traditionally a woman's role has been to be the emotional caregiver, to, you know, keep the family together, to nurture the relationship, to be in that space of emotion, to be closely connected to our feelings, to our tears, to our intimacy in our connections. And then when our children launch, for women, quite often that midlife transition is to move out into society more, to kind of take power into ourselves, to become more active and to take on a role in society. So it's an interesting, intersection for men and women who are in relationship. If men have spent their earlier lives in that traditional masculine role and they hit midlife and now they're wanting to be more expressive and to feel the tears and to feel connected and intimate with their wives, it's just about the time that their wives, who've been in that space for 20 plus years, saying, "Hey, I wish you would talk to me more. Hey, I wish we could be closer. You know, let's work on our intimacy skills. Let's be connected." When women have finally got to the point where they've launched their children and maybe launched a little bit that expectation that their husbands are ever going to be more emotionally open to them. So women are heading out the door, kind of maybe taking on a career or running for office or being more involved, you know, in activism, saving the world. You know, women kind of move into those spaces, just their husbands showing up and saying, "Hey, let's do that getaway weekend," or "Let's do that couples massage," or "Let's talk about things that really matter to us." The wife saying, "Yeah, that conversation passed, that ship sailed about 5, you know, years ago. Now I'm heading out to do my thing in the world." And so it's a challenging time quite often. Often for couples to have the emergence for men into that feminine realm and women emerging into the masculine realm and trying to keep their relationship together at that time. It can be really challenging. But it's also interesting because roles have shifted so much in our culture that for a lot of women, they've spent the early part of their lives in a career having to take on, you know, or following more the masculine role of being the doer and providing financially and spending more time focused on their external and not their internal, that women might be hitting midlife and starting to realize, oh, do I want to have a child? Do I want to do more of the caretaker emotive work with my family? And so that we have a lot of shifts. And for many men, not many men, but for some men who might have spent their earlier lives in a more reflective space or a wanderer space, I might come into their midlife transition and go into the more masculine. My point being that we do this dance in our lifetime between those masculine and feminine energies, and that we're called on to kind of tap into those different parts of ourselves at different times in our lives. But traditionally, if you kind of follow the expected, for men, this transition into midlife is your opportunity to go into the emotive. Unfortunately, for a lot of men, because it's not socially easily accepted for a man to really feel his feelings or go into that emotive or expressive or intimate space, we've seen what we call in Western culture the midlife crisis, where, you know, men awaken to this, "Oh my gosh, how did I get here? How did my, you know, I've spent the last 20 something years of my life at a dead end job or a job that wasn't satisfying. You know, I've been taking care of my family and my children, and is this all there is? And I'm starting to change physically." And you can see kind of this interesting setup for affairs or divorce in couples, because as the husband reaches this midlife crisis space, and he's, you know, looking around, how do I get fulfillment? How do I balance this disillusionment I feel? He might turn to his wife, who's saying, "Hey, I tried to have this conversation with you a long time ago, and I'm over it." And so you can see, again, as I said, the setup for trouble. So how do we help couples and ourselves be prepared for the launch into our midlife transition? And again, back to the question, are we doing what we need to do to get our children, our ready to go from adolescence into adulthood? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of this conversation. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And it's funny because clearly I get fired up about this conversation. I get fired up about this topic because I think it's so critical that we take awareness and pay attention to what it is we're experiencing, to try to identify if we're going through a period of time where we're more emotional or more angry than usual or more feeling grief and allowing ourselves to feel the grief and knowing that it's okay. You know, I talk to a lot of women and men, a lot of parents who have launched their children. And one of the things that seems interesting about our generational experience, not to say that my mom's generation didn't have the same thing, but I will tell you, and I'm sure my mother would concur, that when my sister left home, she didn't go through the crisis. She was yippee-yay, I'm out the door doing my thing. She was really excited. And so I felt like I was somehow maybe not living up to the expectation that when my daughter left, I was really sad about my job as a full-time mom, full-time caregiver ending. I was really didn't quite know what the next phase was going to be, you know, because when I was young, I was not like my friends, the majority of whom came out of the feminist movement and were ready to go into their career work. All of my roommates in college went straight to careers, and I really wanted to get married and have a family, and I figured that would be my career for life. What I didn't think all the way through was that I would be, you know, 52 when my full-time career as a mom kind of shifted, and I would still be living quite a long time, and that what that next space would look like. And so that sadness, that grief of letting that job that I had looked forward to all my life going was really shocking for me. But I know that that's not true for all parents, but for a good deal of my cohort, and maybe it's because I surround myself with people who have similar feelings about raising children, this transition to empty nest has been really challenging for them. One of my friends, one of our couples in our group, just celebrated their 25th anniversary. And so we all came together to celebrate their 25 years together, and their kids are out of the house and just the two of them. And what I love about this friend group is that everyone's been pretty honest about kind of the struggles of marriage and the challenges of kind of renegotiating who we are as couples once our kids left home. And so their coming together at this 25th year was really an extra special celebration, because they had talked about kind of the struggles of getting to their 25th year, having kind of, you know, worked through saying goodbye to the kids and that full-time family life, and to kind of finding their dance together as a couple without children at home. What is that dance now? Who are we without our kids at home? And I realized a couple things at that celebration. One was how important it is to have a group of like-minded couples that you hang out with, and that you support each other, and that you can talk about these things, you know, if you're struggling with your marriage, and to give each other encouragement through kind of the tough times. Because it's a lot to ask for two people to navigate all of the ups and downs and ins and outs of child rearing and intimacy on their own. And there aren't really any great guidebooks, you know, there's a lot of books written about it, but not really great guidebooks step by step, because we're all so unique. So to have this small group of friends that we have who've raised our children together and now we're marching into midlife together, to kind of back each other up. So when one couple's kind of struggling, to have the other one say, you know, hang in there, you get over the hump, there's some good things coming your way, has really been important for all of us. And we also went through that period of launching our children and talking about what they needed to know to be ready to go to college. And I'm seeing now from all the children that I've spent time with that there are great variations in preparedness for adult life. So as I mentioned, there are the four tasks. So let's go over them. Emotionally, in order to launch into adulthood, this is the primary skill that our children need to have. And that is understanding who they are separately from their parents and the expectations their parents have for them of who they're going to be. Being able to take responsibility for our actions, being able to understand the consequences of behavior. It seems like a really basic skill that our children need to learn, but surprisingly, a lot of people go through a great period of time in their life never learning that skill. There's a lot of adults that you would see out there who really struggle with taking personal responsibility for their actions, or, you know, being able to step up and kind of think outside of themselves for the betterment of those in their lives. You know, that emotional groundedness, being able to understand that sometimes we cry and sometimes we're happy, but there's never just this fixed state that we lived in, and that part of emotional maturity is being able to ride that wave of whatever our emotions are at that time. And feeling confident that we'll ride from one emotional experience to another. So that's the emotional launch. And we help our children get there by making them take responsibility or putting them in situations where natural consequences play out. From as early as if you, you know, didn't get your lunch together before you go to school, then I'm not going to run to school and bring your lunch to you. And that might be really controversial for a lot of people to hear, but those are small natural consequences. If you leave your bike outside and, you know it's your responsibility to bring it in and the bike gets stolen, then you don't have a bike until you can buy a new one. Those are small tasks that we have our children go through till we get to the point of, you know, when they're in high school and driving and being on their own, to be able to say, you know, if the car is out of gas and you need to get home, don't call me to bring you the other car so you can drive home. You need to plan ahead and have money to get gas in the car. All of these natural consequences help our children develop emotional responsibility. So the emotional development is first. The second one is the physical developmental stage. So physically, it starts when our children are young, teaching them to brush their teeth or to floss or to brush their hair. I love when my, it happened with both daughters, which I think is so funny, that neither one of them loved brushing the back of their hair because they couldn't see it. And so they figured, you know, why do I have to brush it every day because I can't see it? And one of them always said, it's just string coming out of my head. Why do I have to spend time grooming my hair? So it's those little things about the physical development that we as parents are responsible for, starting with brushing teeth and brushing hair and grooming, all the way to knowing how to eat. Knowing, you know, how much sleep you need to get, making the time to get enough sleep, being able to make your own doctor's appointments and dentist appointments. You know, at what time in our children's lives are they supposed to be able to take responsibility for their physical health and your doctor's appointments? I you know, always wonder, is it through college we should be doing this or not? By the time our kids get to college, they are going to probably want to experiment with alcohol. And what is your family values around that? How will they understand, you know, what drinking is or how it works? And these are conversations we have to have from a young age so that physically our children start taking responsibility for, if you stay up all night and drink and you feel lousy the next day and can't get to class, those again are the natural consequences that emotionally you have to take responsibility for. And physically, at some point, hopefully you're going to stop enjoying feeling lousy and start really valuing feeling good. So we have to teach our children or model the physical launching. The next one is social launching, and that's huge because we take our children from learning how to make friends, learning how, you know, different friendships operate, to what it is to find a lifelong mate, to develop intimate relationships. And that's a long process of at first glance, when we're in preschool and elementary school, we invite all the kids to the parties and everyone's our friend. By the time you get to junior high and high school, the kids start realizing, no, they're different friend groups and they're different people that we can share experiences with. And we have friends on different levels. And then we go through the dating process that can be a long period of time and getting to know different people on different levels. And then ultimately, socially, we want our children to be prepared for making long-term commitments. And it's interesting because since we don't put a lot of focus on marriage as a lifetime commitment anymore, but again, it's another social construct that has changed, because we don't put a lot of focus on that right now, we tend to not, as a culture, teach our children the skills needed to develop a healthy, socially strong, committed relationships. We don't teach marriage skills, and they actually exist. There are marriage skills we can teach. And then the final task our young people need to learn is the financial responsibilities. And that's one of the hardest ways of launching that children go through. Sometimes that takes the longest, is to be able to be financially stable in our culture, because rent is expensive and it's tough to find work. And it's a lot more common for young people to live at home, to become independent financially. But even though they might still need parental help along the way, to learn the responsibilities of, you know, a value of a dollar, shopping for bargains, looking for work that's not only fulfilling but also pays the bills. What is that balance that we're trying to find? Everyone talks about wanting to find their bliss, or, you know, find work that fills your soul, but that's not always possible. Maybe filling your soul means that you find work that provides you with an income so that you can provide for your family, which fills your soul. So those are the four tasks and challenges. And our number is 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. You can get in touch with us online at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, on our Instagram, @thereluctanttherapist. And as always, you're invited to be part of the conversation, 805-781-3875. We'll be back to take your calls. I'm settled ocean through restful waters and deep commotion, often frightened, unenlightened. Sail on, sail on, sail on. I rest the waters, fight Neptune's waters. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And our conversation today centers around launching and the launching of our children into their adult life, their young adult life, and also the launching of ourselves into our next act through midlife and what that looks like. And have you thought about that? I mean, have you thought about what that next phase of your life will look like? You know, it's interesting because I don't know if everyone has the privilege of being able to actually sit down and think about, wow, my kids are going to be leaving home and we're going to be kind of on our own again as a couple. And what do we want this next stage to look like? Because life is busy and there's a lot that goes on all the time, and trying to keep up, as we talked about, financially is a challenge in itself. And so quite often we don't really have the opportunity to sit back and think about these transitions we go through until it's upon us, until we get walloped in the side of the head, you know, and we fall into maybe a depression of sorts, or this feeling of anxiety, you know, these symptoms that rise up and we're not really sure where they come from, for, you know, maybe going into a period of crying jags that are unlike, you know, your norm. All of these ways that our psyche tries to wake us up and say, hey, things are changing. You know, the feelings of depression, feelings of anxiety, feelings of feeling separate or disillusioned or disembodied. I'm trying to think of a lot of the descriptive words that were used that people talk about when they leave this one place in their life, right? This place where we feel grounded, maybe as parents, and we know what our job is, and we know why we're doing it, and we know why we're working so hard and staying focused. And then that ground underneath us that was so solid for so long all of a sudden slips away, and we feel like it's crumbling underneath us. And you know you have to leap to whatever's next, but you're not really sure what that next is. And the leap is much farther than you thought it was. And so inevitably, that transition from one stable period of your life into another stable period of your life, it's called the liminal stage. And the liminal stage has been described as kind of this dark passage or this dark tunnel, the dark of the night of the soul. There's a lot of different descriptors that are beautiful about it, and a little frightening. But it's a time of discovery. It's a time of deep contemplation. And then for some people, it's a time of great anxiety, of great fear, of feeling terror, of feeling lost, of feeling incapable of making decisions, or not wanting to go forward, kind of getting frozen in our tracks. So the thing that's challenging from a therapeutic position is, you know, how do we help people kind of settle into that sense of floating or not knowing or the darkness of the soul, to be able to sit with that long enough until they kind of get to whatever that next time of stability will be. There's a sense of the dissolving, the dissolution of our identity as it was, and the time now that needs to happen to develop this new personality, this new place that we're getting to. So interestingly enough, as adults, we go through similar tasks and challenges launching into our midlife as our children do launching into their adult life. And I'm just curious, do you recognize those similarities? So for adults who are launching into midlife, your emotional launch is now, who am I? What is my self and identity separate from my role as a parent, my role as a spouse? You start kind of looking at your emotional self in a greater perspective or a greater whole. As I said, Jung said it's a time of individuation. Jung also said that you really couldn't do your individuation work, that journey to the soul, until you were 55 or older, because the period of time leading up to 55 is about being productive and building a family and working your career. And so it's not till we get to midlife that we can step back from that emotional self and see ourselves in a different light. So there's the work of developing the new sense of identity in midlife. And how do we go into this new stage of ourself, of our identity, and not lose our connections to the family that we have? Because the traditional midlife crisis, of course, is that you bail from your family. Men tend to go into midlife crisis, wanting change, wanting, to experience who they are. Men, kind of the classic connection between the midlife crisis and men is, who am I? What is it I want? And that, driving, kind of following this angst off into getting a new car or jumping out of a relationship or starting a new life. But if we really thought about what these emotionally charged feelings are, it's really that self inside of us wanting to grow. The social growth period for adults launching is, again, reevaluating your friendships and your relationships. Is my friendship group my friendship group because that's who I hung out with raising kids? Or are they people that really kind of fill my soul? Or do I need to start looking for different cohort of people that I really have a lot in common with? And then reevaluating our relationships and rebuilding our relationship based more on raising children together and now in supporting each other into our next phase of life. And then there's a physical launch for midlife. You know how to brush your teeth now, hopefully, and make your doctor's appointments, and hopefully know your limits with alcohol and what food works for you. But now it's coming to terms with, maybe I can't run a marathon every month anymore, or maybe, sexually my body responds differently, or it's a little more challenging sexually, or, our desires change, or maybe my body doesn't look like it did when I was in my 30s, or even my 40s, and my spouse looks different to me. And, so to coming more, the physical launching at midlife is about coming to grips with how we're changing and to love our bodies and our physicality and our abilities in new ways. And then finally, the financial launch for midlife can be a wide variety of things. My friend who works in finances says the biggest error our generation is making is that we don't have any money saved. And I would say that's because there hasn't been any extra money to save. But we're the first generation, going into near retirement age doesn't have money set aside. So what is our relationship going to be financially? Are we going to sell our house and pay off bills? Or how are we going to be set up for retirement? Will we be able to retire? Is that even something that's going to happen? So as you can see, the launching tasks for adolescence into adulthood and from parenting into midlife are incredibly similar, but they have to be addressed, because if we fail to address these tasks, we tend to see common repercussions. If we don't adjust emotionally, people can find themselves in substance abuse problems, having struggles with their work, dealing with a lot of anger, a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety. Again, our psyche is going to start acting on us if we don't consciously pay attention to what's changing. We'll have those symptoms. If socially we don't look around at our friendships or readjust our marital relationship or intimacy, if we don't grow our intimacy, then we see a spike in divorces when children leave home. People can, feel dissatisfied with their friendships and start kind of sabotaging these relationships. If we don't plan ahead physically, it can be to our detriment as we get older, because everything gets a little more frail the older we get. I know a lot of my peers that are doing hip replacements and knee replacements at this time. So how do we prepare to maybe not have those things happen? And then financially. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation. Or I monologue with myself about this. You know, maybe I'm the only one who is thinking about these launching things, or who really struggled with the changes, you know, in my life and in being ready and prepared for what's coming up next. And I'm curious, Bree, since you're here with me, do you think your parents did a good job preparing you to launch into adulthood? What were some things they did to get you ready?
Oh, yeah. Well, my mom especially, she's a really big advocate for education. She's a teacher herself. She's a third grade teacher. And she's always really emphasized the importance of education. And it was never like a question that I wasn't going to go to college. And I think that's kind of something that was different for my family as opposed to other families and other people who just didn't have that influence in my life. And I'm really thankful she did that, because I don't know if I would have gone to college or not had I not been pushed by my mom so hard.
Well, and that's, it's, you know, interesting, because I don't know if as parents, do a lot of couples sit down and say, hey, here's our game plan for our children. You know, let's sit down and think about what are the things we need to teach them so they're ready to leave the house. Because we aren't given a, you know, parenting rule book when our children are born, but there really are things that they need to know in order to leave the house. And as parents, you sit down and say, hey, we want our kids to know how to ride a bike, to learn to swim, to be able to cook a meal, to do their laundry, you know, these varying tasks, to learn to drive. Do we value college? Are we going to push them towards college? Are we going to pay for it? Like, I'm wondering how many parents sit and really have these long, open-ended discussions about, you know, what is their job in launching their children. I know for myself, if I hadn't, you know, gone into this work and, you know, worked in the world of parenting for 20 years, I don't know if I would have had the understanding that I needed to have these conversations with my husband. It really was going back to school and getting my master's and, you know, and doing the work with families and realizing, wow, so many parents have no idea what their job description is and what they're supposed to be doing. Like, there's a lot of information on how to discipline. There's a lot of information on nutrition. I mean, there's a lot of information out there in different parenting duties, but there really isn't a lot of information on specifically what is your job description as a parent? What is it you're supposed to do and need to do to get your kids ready for launching? 805-781-3875. James, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I was calling to find out if you see that, you know, in these two transition periods in people's lives between, I don't know, let's say going into adulthood versus going into midlife, do you separate financial from the psychological preparation, or are they united? Or are they the same thing?
Well, so the thing that's interesting about the financial prep is that underlying kind of how we prepare financially is understanding what is our relationship to money, you know, psychologically, because that's a whole field of study unto itself, is that for some people, you know, making a certain amount of money is psychologically important to them, being able to provide for their family, or there's a number of comfort, you know, that they need to make in order to live the life that is satisfying to them. And so we really, first and foremost, have to understand our relationship to money and to our expectations for our lifestyle before we can kind of make financial decisions. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I think the question would be, if money were equal security and security equaled a number of options, wouldn't, you know, how do... You may not have a lot of options without the financial piece in place. You might not have a lot of options, so the rest of it would just be hot air.
True. Well, I think that's a big dilemma, because it takes so much more money today to get to a level of comfort than it did, say, you know, 30 years ago, where someone who, you know, was working as a checker at a grocery store could buy a home and buy a car and send their child to college, where that's no longer true. So the careers that offer the opportunity to do those basics aren't there as much. So what do we say to people, you know, everyone needs to make $200,000 a year or your life will not be satisfying? Or do we have to rewrite what we value as financial success or comfort.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. I think the boundaries or the requirements, the financial requirements to feed yourself and shelter yourself and cover your hierarchy of needs are probably different by zip code.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard to treat this as a really broad subject by separating the two. I think if you assume you have all of your financial house in order, your options and decisions of how you're going to treat the different stages or the different transitions would probably be a more open topic. There's a lot of people out there that if they don't have the options, right, they probably, it's a narrow conversation.
All right. So in some ways you're saying it's a privilege to be able to have this thought of what do I want to do with my midlife? Because for most people it's how am I going to get food on the table?
Yeah, I think yes, exactly. Thank you for articulating that. I think what I meant was, I think some of these people are acting out of desperation that do dramatic things and talk about the different, those cliche scenarios that middle-aged men or teenagers who act out and leave the home, those may be more acts of desperation than real pragmatism.
Well, and it's interesting because you brought up something that I didn't mention was that when they look at men going into midlife, and I think in some ways it's true for women as well, but for a lot of men there is that sense of desperation, that first response to realizing that, you're never going to hit a ball out of Wrigley Field, like all those things you thought you would do, and you realize it's not going to happen. That first response, that gut check response, is I'm going to run away because I want to do over, or that first sense is I want to flee because where I am is untenable and it can't be changed. And so I think that's one of the challenges is our first reaction is when you look at your life and you feel like there's no hope that we're going to flee. And then that sets off a whole list of catastrophes. Or maybe it doesn't.
Yep.
Or maybe it doesn't. And that's the other scary thing. Maybe that fleeing opens up a whole different conversation. And maybe the next conversation we have is, whose life is it anyways? When we bond ourselves to another human being, do we then change what our responsibilities are as a human? And can we change that at any time and say, now it's just about me?
Well, I think that's why education is so important. And, it's the understanding that you're going to go through different life stages and life preparation, and if you don't get it at school and you don't get it at home, it's going to be a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Life is more complex every generation.
Boy, I'll say. Well, thanks a lot for the help.
Thanks for calling in. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I recognize that this is a grander topic than, kind of the educational piece of here are the four tasks and challenges we need to face. And maybe there, of course, there really is this privileged piece of it where if you have the education or the financial backing or the safety and comfort of living in a place where you can have these existential thoughts about how am I meeting my needs emotionally, socially, physically, and financially. I mean, there's a lot of privilege in that. But if you have the ability to have these thoughts, how are you preparing yourself and your children for that? And what is it you're doing as a couple to make sure that when your children get to midlife and are ready to, when your children get to the launching age and are ready to leave, it's too late then in many cases to start doing the preparation for renewing your intimacy in your marriage. One of the tasks and challenges really is to look at the job of parenting our children and preparing them for adulthood and teaching them these skills of resilience, at the same time maintaining the intimacy and connection with our spouse. Because it's challenging once the kids leave if you put all your focus on just raising them and what they need and not on maintaining the connection of your relationship. It's tough to get that back when the kids leave home and you look at each other and go, oh, wait, you're a stranger to me now. And how do we find that again? 805-781-3875. Hi, Carol, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, I agree with you. This idea that we're only looking at people in our stage, we only associate with people in our stage. Mm-hmm. When people had bigger families or perhaps, other social things, you were not so caught up in making this money for your success. You looked around and you saw people who didn't have a lot of money and they were happy. Now we're so marketed that we're a millennial or we're a, you know, a boomer or something like that, that people who are millennials don't know they're going to be boomers.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, those are the other. I think we really do need to realize, no, we're not. We're all working along the same continuum. And you need to be looking ahead. You need to be looking back. And then you can, I don't know, you can age gracefully. I feel like I'm in my 70s. I feel really comfortable with where I am. I'm not rich. I can pay my bills. Luckily, my parents were educators, so they didn't teach us to be in love with money. But I think part of it was that we never had to do the hip or the now thing. Mm-hmm. We were always allowed to be individuals, and that's allowed us to then grow up and be comfortable with the individual we became without having to worry so much about the finances of it. And we have pretty broad spectrum. The other thing I wanted to say is I think it's important that adults not refer to the parents' home as living at home. Mm-hmm. You're living in your parents' home, but if your parents never refer to your home as home, what does that, you know, psychologically, what does that do to you?
Well, and it's interesting how, so are you suggesting that children or young adults be prepared to create their own home outside of their parents' home? Like, that's a step.
Exactly.
Okay.
That they always think that they're going to make their own home. That this isn't just, you know, they're not going to be children perpetually. And even, you know, you yourself made the reference to adults living at home. Mm-hmm. No, they're living in someone else's home. They haven't made a home yet.
Well, and it's interesting because I grapple with that, and I think that's a whole other show topic, is because we're one of the few societies that actually expects our young adults to go live and set up a home separate from their parents' home. You know, like we're
true,
one.
But this is the society they're going to have to live in.
True. But then if we can't financially, you know, it's so challenging to buy a home or to rent something. I wonder if it's a setup for young people. You know what I'm saying? Like the average rent in San Francisco now is around $3,000. So for a lot of these kids that are moving up there, they're either living in a collective with a bunch of other poor students or, you know.
Which is their home.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
You know, I mean, home is where you are instead of where you used to be. And if you have that sense that home, psychologically and physically, is where you are, then I think you're going to move pretty, quite more comfortably through the stages of life than if you have the idea that suddenly a door opens and you had no preparation for it.
True. And at what age do you feel like you really fell into feeling like your whole self?
Well, as I said, my folks were teachers. We were not encouraged to be like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I always sort of felt like, I don't know why I always liked me, but at least I knew who I was.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's part of the process, too, is I wonder if there is this, I find myself from 50 on growing into a whole different understanding of who I am individually, whereas before mm-hmm. that, it was always myself in context of my relationship with my family and then my relationship with my husband and my relationship with my children. And then it wasn't until, you know, I hit 50 that I realized, oh, now it's time for the relationship with myself, and it's profoundly different and satisfying.
You could be right. I retired from a very busy, successful career at 50 and have had the most wonderful, multifaceted life since then, doing so many different things that I have enjoyed doing and taking responsibilities I never had before. It's been just a wonderful experience.
Well, and that's a perfect way for us to close it out today. Carol, thanks for taking the time to call. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can podcast our shows at iTunes, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can also email me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. As always, I appreciate you supporting this show and public radio, KCBX. I will see you again next week to talk about whatever comes up.
Everywhere. don't you?